You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Proverbs. Today on Sandy Adams Radio, Pastor Sandy will begin in Proverbs chapter 11.
And I got to ask you, when was the last time you prayed with another person and invited Jesus into their life? Is that convicting to you? If you haven't prayed with someone for a while, it should be. We are here to win souls. He who is wise is those who win souls. Tragically, too many Christians are like the Arctic River, frozen over at the mouth. That's their problem. Oh, well, I'm just a witness by the way I live. Well, okay, that's good. That's good. You got to be a witness by the way you live, but you also got to open your mouth. And you got to invite someone to pray, to receive Christ. You've got to be verbal in your witness as well. Jesus has called us all to go into all the world, which includes our neighborhood and our schools and our office and the ballpark. Go into all the world and share the gospel. He says, if the righteous will be recompensed on the earth, how much more the ungodly and the sinner? Boy, the wages of sin is due even before some people die. Well, chapter 12 begins, whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. A good man obtains favor from the Lord, but a man of wicked intentions he will condemn. A man is not established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous cannot be moved. Notice this verse. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. Ladies, here it is. Here's your choice. You can be a crown on your husband's head, or you can be a cancer in his bones. You can be his greatest blessing, or you can be his worst curse. You see, an excellent wife, she believes in her husband. She understands her man's needs, how to support him, how to prop him up. She pleases him sexually. Whereas a wife who causes shame, she's someone who's never pleased. She doubts him at every turn. She makes little cutting comments all the time. She thinks only of her own happiness. She manipulates him by withholding sex and support. I mean, every wife here tonight is either a crown or a cancer. You're an ornament on your husband's head, or you are rottenness in his bones. I mean, a wife holds incredible sway over her husband. Ladies, you are shaping your husband for better or for worse. Through a wife's wise influence, a husband can soar off the launching pad and conquer the moon. Or that same wife can sabotage the mission. Well, verse 5. The thoughts of the righteous are right, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. The words of the wicked are lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright will deliver them. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. A man will be commended according to his wisdom, but he who is of a perverse heart will be despised. Better is the one who is slighted but has a servant than he who honors himself but lacks bread. That's great. That's a great proverb. What he's saying here is that public perception is a deception often. Press releases never tell the whole story. In other words, it's far better to be overlooked by the public, to be slighted. It's far better to be slighted by the public, but to have that servant say good things about you. Or to have that family that's around you most often say good things about you. You know, it's better to have the respect of the people who know you most, that's what he's saying, than to have this public reputation. Better to be honored by the man who works with you than by someone who doesn't know you and just writes a flattering article. That's what he's saying. Now here's a verse for the animal lovers in the crowd. Any animal lovers in the crowd? Yeah, here's a verse for you. Verse 10. A righteous man regards the life of his animal, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. The righteous man, he cares about his dog, I mean, he realizes that animals are created by God as well. And so he keeps his dog from barking all hours of the night so his neighbor doesn't kill it. He cares about his dog. Whereas we're told the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. The pit bull owner, he spends a lot of time with his dogs, but he's beating them and he's torturing them and he's, you know, stirring up strife and aggression in their heart. You know, we all should live in such a way to where if our dogs could talk, we wouldn't be embarrassed. You ever thought about that? What if your dog could come in and testify of you in front of the church and tell us what kind of a person you truly are? Oh boy. A righteous man regards the life of his animal. Well, you know what? It reminds me of the guy. This guy strolls into the restaurant. He's got his dog with him. The two of them are asking for a table. Well, it's a pretty highfalutin place, and the maitre d' looks at him and says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve dogs here." He said, "But you don't understand. This is a talking dog." He said, "Well, I don't believe you. Talking dog." He said, "You got to seat us. You got to give us some dinner. This is my talking dog." He said, "Prove it to me." He said, "Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to ask my dog three questions. If he answers all three questions, will you promise you're going to give me a table, going to serve me a meal? You might as well serve me a free meal." Guy said, "Sure, no problem. Let's hear it." Okay, turns to his dog and he says, "Okay, Spot, what's the opposite of smooth?" "Roof." "Wow, one out of one." Then he turns to him again. He says, "Okay, Spot, what's the top of the house?" "Roof." "Hey, two out of two." You know, the maitre d' is kind of rolling his eyes. Then he says, "Okay, Spot, now for the grand finale. Who was the best baseball player of all time?" Spot goes, "Roof." "Wow, three out of three." Well, by this time, the maitre d', he's had all he can take. He grabs them both by the scruff of the neck, throws them out of the restaurant. They're laying there on the street corner, and suddenly the dog turns to his master and he says, "I guess with that last question, I should have said Aaron." Here's the moral of the story. Be kind to your animals. Verse 11, "He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity is devoid of understanding." In other words, playing video games all day doesn't get the grass mowed. Sons need to till their land. "The wicked covet the catch of evil men, but the root of the righteous yields fruit. The wicked is ensnared by the transgression of his lips." In other words, he gets caught in his own lies. "But the righteous will come through trouble. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise." The fool thinks he's right. He doesn't need an objective opinion, and yet everyone else sees his folly. Verse 16, "A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame." Foolishness is apparent to all. "He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness deceit. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health." Words can cut deep, can they not? "Some people have a knife for a tongue." There it is. They speak sharp words. We're told here the truthful lip shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. I mean, keep lying long enough and people are going to stop listening to you. You'll be exposed. He said, "Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy. No grave trouble will overtake the righteous, but the wicked shall be filled with evil. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are his delight. A prudent man conceals knowledge." In other words, he doesn't have to tell you everything he knows. "But the heart of fools proclaim foolishness." He just spews out nonstop silliness. Verse 24, "The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression." And as chronic worry leads to depression, but a good word makes it glad. Boy, the power of a good word. How just one good word can lift a person's demeanor. and just bring them gladness. Here's a little poem by Helen Allison. One little raindrop may think itself too small, yet somewhere a thirsty flower awaits its fall. One little word unspoken may seem too small to say, but somewhere for that one word a heart may hope and pray. A woman and her daughter came up to me this morning and she introduced me to her daughter. She's 15 years old. She says, "Pastor Sandy, I just think this is so great. This morning my daughter said that you're pretty cool." And I just think it's incredible that a 15-year-old would say that her 50-year-old pastor's cool. Well, I don't know, but that really encouraged me. Just one little kind word. You know, it's amazing how we can bless people with just small little tokens, small little words. It's sobering to think how an encouraging word can provide us the lift that we need. Job 6, verse 25 tells us how forceful are right words. Solomon would agree. Verse 26, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. You know, peer pressure isn't just a teenage problem. It's a reality for every age. This is why we need to make sure that we surround ourselves with positive peer pressure. Get with the right people who are headed in the right direction, and their example will help you get it right. You know, the Philistines would have never captured Samson had he not let his hair down with the wrong person, with Delilah. Don't let your hair down with the Delilahs. Choose your friends wisely. Just ask Samson. Verse 27 starts with a funny picture. The lazy man does not roast what he took in hunting. And this is a guy he's been out. He bagged several deer. He's got a lot of food. His freezer's full of meat. He's just too lazy to get up and cook the meat that he has. The verse ends, but diligent is man's precious possession. I mean, think of the lumberjack who chops the tree over and over on the same cut line until finally he shouts, "Timber!" The tree topples. I mean, the work is boring, it's mundane, it's tiring, and yet he keeps laying his axe to the same spot on the tree over and over again. Guys, this is how you get up and go to work every morning. It's like falling a tree. It's not always fun. It's not always frills and chills. At times, it's boring. You'd rather sleep in. But diligence is man's precious possession. You keep chopping on that same line, and eventually that tree is going to fall. That's how you work. Chapter 12 ends, "And the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death." Again, that's a probability, not a guarantee. There have been many cases in history when a man's righteous life actually led to his martyrdom. Well, chapter 13 begins. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. A man shall eat well by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the unfaithful feeds on violence. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. It's been said it takes a man about 18 months to learn how to talk, then the rest of his life to learn how to keep his mouth shut. The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. A lazy man desires, but he won't perspire. He thinks that his wages should be no sweat. Guys, nobody's guaranteed a paycheck. It's been said the reason some people don't recognize an opportunity when they meet it is it usually goes around wearing overalls and looks like hard work. Hard work, endurance, is the key to realizing your dreams. The great inventor Thomas Edison, he once said this, "I am wondering what would have happened to me if some fluent talker had converted me to the theory of an 8-hour workday. If my life had been made up of mere 8-hour days, I do not believe I could have accomplished a great deal." Verse 5 tells us, "A righteous man hates lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and comes to shame. Righteousness keeps him whose way is blameless, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. There is one who makes himself rich, yet has nothing, and one who makes himself poor, yet has great riches." Happiness comes with love, not necessarily with lots of money. You know, I believe that if you have to work do it for as much money as possible, with a few exceptions. Don't forfeit your family. Don't step outside of God's will. Don't compromise your integrity. And don't be miserable at it. Find a good fit where you can use the gifts and talents God has given you to make a living. Well, he says, the ransom of a man's life is his riches, but the poor does not hear rebuke. The light of the righteous rejoices, but the lamp of the wicked will be put out. By pride comes nothing but strife, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished, but he who gathers by labor will increase. How you obtain your money is more important than the money you obtain. He's saying here that honest gain will increase. Wealth gained by dishonesty will diminish. He says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it is a tree of life. You know, it's been said, man can survive 40 days without food, 3 days without water, 12 minutes without air, but not 1 second without hope. And broken promises defer hope. I mean, promise your kids something and go back on your word, and it poisons their hearts. Animosity and cynicism set in. Promise an employer a raise and not deliver, and you suddenly have a grumbling employee on your hands. We've got to be very careful with what we promise our kids or what we promise each other. You know, a promise that's not fulfilled defers hope and it sours a heart. I believe our cynical society today is the result of promises we've believed but have never been fulfilled. Verse 13, he who despises the word will be destroyed, but he who fears the commandment will be rewarded. I mean, in the long run, your attitude toward the commandment, toward the Bible, is the greatest determiner of your life. The law of the wise is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares of death. Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard. Notice that. Sin is a cruel taskmaster. Sin makes life hard. God created life to be lived with Him. Life goes better with God. He says, every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool lays open his folly. A wicked messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful ambassador brings health. Poverty and shame will come to him who disdains correction, but he who regards a rebuke will be honored. Let me ask you, can you receive a rebuke? Are you open to correction in your life? Or if somebody criticizes you in any way, are you just throw up the walls, throw up the defenses? Oh, you got no right to say that to me. A wise person, he entertains a rebuke. But it is an abomination. He says, a desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to fools to depart from evil. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. Once again, choose your friends wisely. Don't hang out with fools. He says, evil pursues sinners, but to the righteous good shall be repaid. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. Notice this, a good man stores up, not just for his kids, but for his grandkids as well. He's working on his college fund for his grandkids. Much food is in the fallow ground of the poor. Notice here the poor man's plight. He lacks the investment capital to take advantage of the opportunities available to other men. I mean, if he could plow the land, he could profit, but he can't afford a tractor. That's why he says in verse 23, and for lack of justice, there is waste. Now he says, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. If you're a parent, wake yourself up. You need to pay attention to this last verse. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. The Hebrew word translated promptly means early. Wait until a kid is 15 years old to exercise discipline, and you've waited too late. It's been said the best time to tackle a minor problem is before he grows up. You know, pediatricians tell us that 50% of what a parent can do to shape a child's character has to be done by the age of five. 50%. Children are like wet cement. You got to shape them before they harden permanently. You know, child development researchers speak of the phoneme contraction. They say that the larynx of a baby is very soft, very pliable. And as he learns words and as he mimics his parents' language, the larynx hardens around those sounds. In fact, once the larynx forms around certain pronunciations, it's very hard to train the child to make other sounds. This is why a person's accent is very hard to alter, even later in life. I mean, you can take a baby from France, take that baby, bring them over here, put them in your home, and they'll be speaking English with a southern accent. It's how they, whatever they hear around them, that's how their accent hardens and shapes, and it happens very early in their life. It'd be very hard for that child to learn a French accent. And this is not just true with language. This is true with other forms of behavior as well. And this is why firm but loving discipline needs to occur very early in a child's life. If you allow a child's attitude to harden around the wrong assumptions or the wrong responses early in their life, it will be much more difficult to change that child later on. You can't reason with a young child. They don't see the negative consequences of their wrong behaviors. That's why you have to manufacture pain for a young child. And you have to associate it with dangerous behavior if you don't want that behavior repeated. This means a spanking. That's what this means. It's biblical. In fact, the Bible tells us if you love your kids, you'll get a rod and you'll spank them. My daddy did it. There's times when he thinks he needs to do it now. My mama did it. You need to do it. If you love your child, you'll spank your child. Now notice this. Notice he doesn't say hand. He doesn't say, he who spares his hand hates his son. We don't discipline with our hand. We discipline with a rod. We find a neutral object, a rod, or a belt, or a paddle. My grandma used a switch. She went out in the backyard and she cut a switch off of one of the bushes out there and she spanked us with a switch. You remember that, Mom? I remember my grandma running through the house after me with that switch. In our family, we used a wooden spoon. Going to get the wooden spoon, boys. You want your kids to welcome your hands, but to fear the rod. You know, it got to the point where sometimes I would just walk into the kitchen, I'd grab that wooden spoon, I'd bring it back in the room, and I'd just lay that wooden spoon down right on the table. That's all I'd have to do. Instant behavior. You want them to fear the rod, but welcome your hands. Now, we're going to talk more as we go through the Proverbs about how and when and why to spank, but for now, know that if you love your kids, you're going to spank them, and you're going to do it early in life. Spankings are far more effective on 5-year-olds than they are on 15-year-olds. Here's the problem about life. After a kid, the older a kid gets, they start hardening on both ends. They start hardening up here and they start hardening down here, and that's why spankings don't work as well later on in life. You got to spank them early. Tonight's last proverb, the righteous eats to the satisfying of his soul, but the stomach of the wicked shall be in want. He always wants more.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is teaching his way through Proverbs verse by verse. Immediately following the Psalms, this book keeps the reader engaged and offers wisdom in the form of practical application. Also, like Psalms, it's comprised of many contributors, so there's not just one author, however. Solomon is identified as the primary source. Phrases like a word to the wise come from this book of application and suggest a purposeful nature to the text. This should come as no surprise, as every word of the Bible has been written with purpose and is intended to provide insight and direction to us. If you would like to learn more about how to apply these teachings, head over to sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's about all we have time for today, but we look forward to continuing this study with you in Proverbs. Pastor Sandy has more to share about how you can apply what you've learned from today's message. So come back for more in our next edition. Thanks for listening to Sandy Adams Radio.